Need a place to find poison-free supplies for your next paladin and queen dinner party? Sure, go ahead and go to Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need for any time and back to school. Plus, never get poisoned when you start your shopping at robhaswebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from the magical land of Everrealm, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who never gets the dubs, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our continuing coverage of week two of The Quest on ABC. And here is the man. He was on his own quest last week to go and have a great time in Florida, but he is back with us, our regular co-host for The Quest wrap up. Here he is, the tabulator himself, Kurt Clark.
Hey there.
Kurt, how are you?
I am doing amazing.
Kurt, oh my goodness. Oh, baby.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the quest. Okay. So
I understand everything that happens. So let's bring it on. Let's talk about this.
All right. Let's just talk broad strokes here, okay. Talking about the quest and the episode entitled Tournament for the Queen. I felt like overall kind of a ho-hum night on the quest for 55 minutes.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing, but I have a theory about her. Not maybe a theory, but I've come to realize after watching the first couple episodes that, you know, they kind of really promote the quest as a story that has a competitive reality show built into it. And so just the first couple episodes are really the prologue, the things in the movie that lead up to the big action sequence. And for me, what we saw last week and what we saw this week is really akin to anybody who's a video gamer out there, to kind of how the beginning of many video games is kind of a tutorial. Like, here's how things work. Here's how you get through. I think we're getting a lot of that out of the way in terms of not just the game mechanics, but some, you know, the training. So to me, I think after these 2 weeks, we're done with the tutorial of the game. We're done with the people getting to know each other, and I think, as we saw at the end of the episode, that things are really going to pick up from here and get into the meat of the plot and the meat of the story.
Okay, yeah, because I felt like this was kind of boring, the, you know, skills competition that took place over most of the episode, although I have to say, I do love my guy Shondo. That's my guy, Kurt.
I wasn't sure on him at first. I thought...
No, he's the best.
Yeah. I thought last week that he was going to, when they were making their way from our world to the castle, that he was just going to go into the woods and start beating up. He's the one that production's going to have to be, whoa, hold back.
Yeah, I don't think Shondo knows it's fake.
No.
I don't think he knows that it's fake. He's there to get the dubs. He's there to get dubs. That's all he cares about.
Yeah, I'm liking the partnership between him and Jimbo Slice.
Yes, fantastic. Okay, so I have to say, I thought it was slow tonight.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, I don't know. But then, we cannot bury the lead here, because at this hour, the queen, her grace, the great queen rally is dead at this hour. Oh, no.
Well, it looks like she might get better.
Yeah.
Not to give too much away from the previews, but it looks like the next episode revolves around seeing if there's any way to help the queen. And let's also not she's Queen Rally of the 23rd.
The 23rd.
So maybe the 24th is in line and ready to come in.
Yeah.
There have been 22 other Queen Rallies.
It was a real purple wedding tonight for Queen Rally. And so I do have to say, Kurt, I did feel like I saw this coming a mile away. I'm like, it's 8:58, and where is this going?
Like, yeah, they got to the point where they had to stand behind their chosen, who they wanted to stay. And there was still a good 10-15 minutes left in the episode. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen here? And I don't know if it's just because I'm still a little bit in the whodunit frame of mind from last summer, but I was like, is she gonna? Is something? Is she? No. And I thought it was fine, but then Yep, she got poisoned.
Oh, yes, definitely got poisoned. And so, yeah, I have to say it was almost like shot like the end of a whodunit. And yeah, I'm ready for next week. Let's bring in Giles and let's figure out who killed the queen.
Letitia.
Yes. We're going to come in and let's bring in Giles and he could tell the whole story of the queen, she will no longer be able to whine about anything. Oh, my God. Yes, the queen. Terrible news.
No, I didn't realize that Creo was also the royal steward. Was that made clear at the last episode? I just knew him as Creo, the guide and the dreamer. But it turns out, I guess he's the royal steward, just like his father was the royal steward to the queen's father.
Yeah, a little exposition there, but the steward is responsible for the food, aren't they?
I was thinking if somebody's going to be a royal taster, it's going to be Creo, and he kind of dropped the ball on that one. And yeah, I mean, I'm getting major Disney villain vibes from the Grand Vizier. I don't know if there's ever been a happy-go-lucky, non-evil vizier in the history of fairy tales and storytelling. I mean, it's all I would be, if I was a player in the game, it would be all I could do to not break character and just call him out for being the evil person that he is.
So that's who you think killed the queen? You're not throwing shade at any of the paladins? You don't think it was Bonnie?
one amongst you. No, I think that would be too whodunity. Like you said, maybe it was Creo, the steward. But I'm trying to figure out if, you know, the big obvious quote unquote villain slash evil person is the Grand Vizier. But is that too obvious? And did Creo do something, or are they both good guys? I don't know. So
yeah, I think that this show isn't going to have a major plot twist. Like, I think that they're, you know, we got a lot of ground to cover. We only got like 10 episodes. I don't think we have time for that. Creo was actually a bad guy the whole time.
So are we on a mole hunt? Is this like 24?
Yes. moly. Who's the moly? But I think it's got to be the vizier.
Yeah, he's just throwing off major evil vibes, and maybe we'll all be proven wrong, and it was Creo the whole time, or one of the fates.
because there was like tension over, you know, in the beginning of the episode when they end up, you know, everybody have to wake up early and they get everybody down there and, you know, and Creo is like, remember, you got to take a knee and bow to the queen when she comes through. And then she comes through and she welcomes the paladins to Sanctin, and the vizier, she's like saying like, I'm assuming that the paladins are being given proper accommodations. Like, well, you know, they're okay. We have bigger priorities. And she's like, no, treat them as our guests. It's like, oh.
And I thought maybe that's where like the dinner was going to be. Like, there was no real kind of postscript at the end of the first episode, was there?
Yeah, there was no meal at the end of the episode. Yeah. The episode one ended with the fates.
Yeah, and I thought maybe that where I thought this was going to go when the queen came up was that she was going to escort them to grander quarters, or, you know, maybe as people get their marks, you know, Bonnie had the mark of leadership, and now Shondo has the mark of dexterity. Maybe as people get marks, they get better quarters, and we don't. Maybe that hasn't happened yet. I don't know, but yeah, he.
I think you're reaching with that one, Kurt. I don't think they're getting upgraded rooms.
It's funny. Yeah. They're platinum status. Yeah, that's for season two.
Okay, so just we talked about in the beginning of the episode what happened, and then there was like a whole thing where like some guy came in on horseback, and I thought this was a little confusing. Some guy came in on horseback that was dying, and like he got in there like, oh my God, protect the queen, and they had to get her out of there. And then what was this guy's deal?
This is where I had to turn the closed captioning on, and this is where I learned all sorts of names of the players and the character, the cast, and so he was on the front lines of a battle, and he was saying that basically the soldiers, the front lines are falling. And I guess this must be the battle with Verlocks the darkness. And so he basically rode back to say that the front lines were falling and that they must, you know, prepare for battle. Because okay. The battle sounds like it's coming to them.
All right. Now, what's the name of the instructor guy?
Sir Ansgar.
Sir Ansgar.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, closed captioning.
Yeah. And he's basically the good cop and bad cop rolled all into one.
Yeah, he's like the Liam Neeson character in the Lego movie. He plays both parts.
Yes, yeah, he really does. Because he's like, he'll be like on the phone like, or he'll be talking to them and be like, Kurt, you're disgusting. You're terrible. You're the worst. Like, but you're better than this, Kurt. You can do it. You can do it. Like, he'll break you down, but he'll pump you up too.
Yeah, he's the drill sergeant, definitely.
Yes, but he's also like the coach. Like, he's going to build you up also, if you need it. But if you get cocky, he's going to break you down.
Yeah.
Sir Ansgar, like, makes everybody feel bad about it. Did you see this guy? He was dying, and he rode back here. Like, would you do that? Would you do that for our queen?
Yeah. And he's like, what would you do? And I literally sort of sitting on the couch, and I go, like, my response would be, whatever it takes. And sure enough, the first response by Jim was, whatever it takes. I'm like, okay, so I guess that's a... Not a bad response. And he's like, good. That's what I would expect. Whatever it takes.
Yeah. All right. So we did get the paladins out to the, what would you call this? Obstacle course training facility?
I had training fields.
Training fields.
And, yeah. And then this is where I saw, like, this is where I kind of came to the realization that this is kind of the necessary evil of this story format. And I know that, like, in the past we've talked about how this is kind of the whodunit of the summer. This actually reminds me almost a bit more of the Fox show Murder in Small Town X, where it's more of this immersive environment. There, they have this fictional town of Sunrise in the Northeast U.S. where the townsfolk were improv actors and they interacted with them. This feels almost a lot more like that than whodunit. Whereas there's a storyline that's going to progress. They're in a Renaissance festival setting, and all the people they're interacting with are actors. And when I kind of came to the realization that this is the story, this is kind of the necessary evil that they have to get through this. This is kind of the point where, as they rode out to the training fields, they're like, okay, I see where it's going to maybe take a couple episodes to ramp up, and it's a risk, I think, that they're taking with that, but let's hope it pays off.
Okay, Kurt, so when they're out in the training field, who was it that lost the sun spear? There's like three
Leticia.
Girls. Yeah, there's three girls, and I really I can't tell who is. There's Ashley, there is Lena, and there's Leticia, and I have a hard time, you know, differentiating who is who if they don't have the lower third underneath them.
Well, it'll be a little bit easier after tonight's episode, but Leticia is the WWE person.
Yeah.
And she was the one, she's a little bit bigger. She was the one that lost her portion of the sun spear.
Okay. And I feel like that should have been a bigger deal. And I feel like the sun spear is kind of important, and she kind of lost it. And I felt like, I thought she got off with the slap on the wrist.
I was wondering if this was an eventuality that production had even planned for. Like, literally, they're like, okay, we have this 12-part prop, and one of our contestants lost theirs in the field. And I would not be at all surprised if what Sir Ansgar handed back to her was, like, the replacement's backup portion of the sun sphere.
Oh, you think she, like, lost it on the way to the field?
I think it's still out in the field.
Yeah.
They had a backup on hand, and... I'm guessing that was almost even like a little bit of an ad lib. I would not be surprised if production had not planned for the event that someone loses their portion of the kingdom. I mean, imagine if this was real. This person just lost a part of the artifact that's going to save the entire realm.
I know.
It's broken into 12 parts, so maybe, you know, it's bound to happen.
It's probably happened before.
Yeah.
He's like, from now on, don't disappoint me, he said to her.
Yes. Okay. He did call her out quite a bit.
All right, so then everybody goes through the obstacle course. And for people who are listening to this and didn't watch it, so you had to score points. And so there was like five parts of this or four parts of this. You had to what? Shoot a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Then you had to like do some sort of like ride while you were on a horse. You had to shoot a bow and arrow while you were riding a horse. Then you had to what? Throw a spear.
Yep.
Then you had to do like jousting.
Yeah, there were a couple targets on the sides. I can't remember if they're like one to three, but there were a few targets you had to hit with your joust, with your lance.
And then you had to like hit a paper mache skull with the warhammer.
You think it was paper mache? I thought it was like at least like ceramic or something.
Something like that.
But you had to try your hardest. And This reminded me a bit of Colby Donaldson's Top Shot. These are actually, I think, except for the hammer and the lance, I know that they've had archery and spear throwing on there. So, kind of Renaissance Top Shot.
Okay. And the problem is that our alleged paladins, who are the only hope of the realm, are really not that good at this stuff.
Except for Shondo.
Shondo. All right, well, first, we start off strong. There's two standouts, really.
Yeah.
We start out strong with Jasmine, and she does a really good job. She scores a 91. And they
asked Ansgar to crack a smile.
Yes.
And he starts to see the warm up.
And he said, how did you learn how to do this? And she's like, I learned in my imagination. What?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then the second person to go is Ashley.
Yeah. And she's a horse. She's a horse trainer.
Or the whole reason that she's on the show is she knows about working with horses.
Yes.
She's the horse whisperer.
Yes.
And she did like really terrible.
I think she handled the horse okay.
Yes.
It was the doing anything on the horse other than riding the horse that kind of threw her.
Yes. She was like one of a couple people that she was shooting the bow and arrow at the target, but her arrows just like hit the target and fell on the floor.
Yeah, and they seemed to bounce off as opposed to like actually, piercing it and sticking. And at least like I think it was Bonnie who completely looked like she was missing the target. I mean, at least Ashley was actually hitting the target, but it just wasn't doing much.
Yes. And then you had Bonnie who she told us that her dream was to smash a skull with a hammer. Which I feel like I don't think that she should have gotten through the psychological testing to get on this show. If that's a dream that she's had, I think I'm sorry, Bonnie, you're out. We're gonna go with somebody else.
But maybe it's also like checking it off her bucket list so she can actually move on and get to some more socially acceptable dreams.
Yeah, but she stunk too in the challenge.
She did, not as bad as a few. She was definitely towards the bottom tier.
Okay, and now we have a little bit of a montage of a couple people that we just sort of cycle through, and then we get to my boy Shondo, my guy.
I thought this was going to go the opposite way.
Yes.
I think he was talking about getting the dubs, and I thought, okay, here it goes.
Yes, Shondo, who, yes, as you mentioned last week, he said, we're going to, not let them try to get any of our guys. So he'll kill somebody on this show if he needs to.
I think he will.
And he goes up there, and he breaks the record that they were going goo goo gaga over Jasmine, who had 91 points. Shondo doubles her score. He goes 183.
I literally was like, holy, like what? Like, I didn't even know that was a possible score. Like, I did not know that was within the range. And I was trying to figure out if they got points for horsemanship or, I guess, I didn't look too closely at, like, I guess they could have gotten 50 a few times on the bullseye, but.
Did you say horsemanship?
Yes.
Is that a
yes,
thing?
I did.
You can get horsemanship?
Horsemanship. How you perform on a horse.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Yes.
No, but I didn't know couldn't tell if the scores were completely just the target practice or if there was any sort of timing involved. So, but he 183 somehow he got amazing. My jaw literally dropped.
And for Shondo, it's all about getting the W. When he goes out there to compete, he's got to get the W. It's all about the dub. He's looking for the dub, and he's going to get the dub.
Yes, and he got the dub.
Now, Kurt, is this show fair at all? Like, how in the world are we having a competition where the Bonnies of the world are competing in a physical competition against Shondo?
Well, because this challenge was all about dexterity, I think that it. We're going to see future opportunities for others to rise and shine. Like she did get the leadership badge. I'm guessing there's going to be some perhaps more mental badges down the road. So as long as it's a covering of the bases, I'm actually okay with it.
I don't know. I mean, this seemed like even more unfair than like some survivor challenges where it's a physical challenge. Like there was no part of like putting the puzzle together on this.
Well, they're trying to get the best hero. I mean, if you can't handle the weaponry, get out.
I mean, should this be sort of like the MTV challenge where we have like a men's hero and a women's hero?
No, you know, I did not have it. I did not have a huge issue with it.
Okay.
He did. Yes, he did completely clean up. I think it's one of those things where I might have to look back and reflect on how things end up going with future challenges. I don't mind that it's imbalanced potentially in one episode, as long as we see down the road that there's quite a variety of things that happen.
I mean, there were some guys that couldn't hit the target either, but I feel like if the competitions are going to be like this and Shondo can just be this guy, I'm trying not to say beast mode. I'm trying to find a different verb.
That's another show.
Yeah, but I mean, if he could just dominate in these physical challenges, I don't see how this is fair.
He Sean dominated.
Sean dominated?
Yeah, Sean Doe.
Shondo Blades. I followed him on Twitter after this. I'm in. I'm on Team Shondo. He's my guy.
What you think about it, like the jousting and the skull crushing were, I believe, like 15 points each. And so where he racked up the points was in his accuracy with the spear and his accuracy with the bow and arrow. And given that, I think, okay, if I'm breaking down the 183, if you got five bullseyes if you got three bullseyes between the spear and the bow and arrow, which was four total shots, that's 150 points right there. Mm-hmm. So I think most of his points had nothing to do with his physical strength as much as it was about accuracy and focus, which they did kind of reflect. I mean, it all came from the arrow and the spear, so I'm not too upset. That could have easily been anybody else. There's nothing about his background that necessarily gives him the edge in a bow and arrow contest.
Okay. All right, so then, you know, a couple more people go in the montage, and then we get to the disaster of Christian.
Yes, the woman on horseback.
Yes, who they're hazing him. They called him a woman.
The vizier's like, he said, like, is the horse riding the woman or is the woman riding the horse? And the queen was like, that's Christian.
Yes. Yeah. So that was weird that they, what was Christian's problem with hitting the targets? That his horse was not cooperating?
I just don't think that because in the challenge, in the Fates challenge last week, he seemed to do okay with the bow and arrow. So maybe the horse wasn't cooperating. I do know that, you know, that I have heard that, you know, mounted combat is much harder than on the ground combat.
Makes sense.
So maybe that's what did it. But, you know, people were pointing out even later that, you know, he seems to potentially have this track record going of saying he's good at things that he actually is not that good at versus painting a realistic picture of his skill set.
Yeah, he was very good with the bow and arrow in the final, you know, Duel of the Fates last week.
Yes, or at the very least, we didn't get to kind of have an overhead view to see how people were actually shooting, but remember the Fates, the only way you had to advance, you didn't have to hit targets, you just had to have your target not be hit the most. So as long as the other two people in that Fates competition were shooting at each other's targets, he could have completely missed and actually won that challenge. Yeah. So we don't actually know how many arrows he hit, but it did seem like he was hitting the targets.
Yes, and also we found out later on in the episode that he has a good social game, Christian.
Yes.
He has a good social game. That's important, as we're learning on the quest.
Yes.
Okay. So who was it that went up to the queen and called her my lady? And that was offensive. That was the wrong thing to say.
That was the personal trainer guy. I believe that was Andrew.
Andrew. And do we think Andrew is a suspect in the murder of the queen?
Yes.
Andrew!
I mean, I'm guessing that they are... they are going to fall under suspicion for murdering the queen or for poisoning the queen. Someone's going to try to blame it on them. I'm guessing that's going to be kind of how the plot progresses. We'll see what happens with that.
I thought the paladins took it pretty well that the queen died.
Yeah.
They didn't seem like... they did not freak out that much.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I've been to to murder mystery dinners, the kind of the theater kind where the actors are amongst you and around you, and you're not necessarily participating as much as you're observing. It's kind of that same thing where somebody really does get someone gets killed, and you're just kind of like sitting there, eating your dessert and just kind of waiting for something else to happen. So.
Yeah. So we'll get more into that when we get there. Okay. So it turns out that the bottom three were, it was Christian, it was Jim, who we haven't talked about, and Ashley. Now, what's Jim's deal? Jim chokes under pressure?
Apparently, he's got kind of a confidence issue. I believe he's the Quidditch player in the group. It seems like just a nice all-around guy, but who may not necessarily be confident in his own skills. And I really liked this scene where we saw Jasmine and Letitia kind of buddying up to him and encouraging him to focus and to bring it home and to do his best. I like the little bond that they were forming there.
Yeah, he locked up under the bright lights, and that's not what Shondo does.
No. Shondo, I almost said beast mode. Beast mode Shondo, but Shondo gets the dubs, and he's got faith in that Jim can bring the swag and continue to bring the swag.
Jim gets nervous. He doesn't get the dubs.
No, but he did. But later. Second, yeah. Redemption dubs.
One of the other funny things I thought was with after Bonnie went, she got 40 points and she's like, oh, I can do better. And the guy's like, you promise? And she's like, yeah, because you'll be dead. I like when they tell them how they're going to die on the show. It's good. It's that's the one through line with whodunit and this show is the threat of imminent death for all the contestants.
See, I remember you were talking with Jessica about that last week, and I didn't get the impression that they were dying. Like when they walk off the set of the Fates, I got the impression that they were like almost like they were like taking that they were walking through a gate that was taking them back to our realm. That they were when they were banished from Everrealm and taken back home. Like, to me, it wasn't a disintegration as much as it was and you can go back home now.
So you think it was more of a transporter?
That's how I saw it. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And then they are commemorated forever in the windows of the Chapel of the Fates.
Yes. Well, that is nice that they commemorate them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Maybe I have like a G-rated filter through which I watch what happens to these people.
Yes. But they will die on the battlefield.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Yes. If they make it that far.
Yes.
Okay. So we go back to the camp after that, and we are ready for, we're going to see the Fates later on. But we see some time interacting, and we find out about a Christian social game, and Jim and Ashley are a little nervous about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, Ashley sees that Christian's been playing a social game. I don't know, we didn't see Jim necessarily talk as much about it, but Jasmine, the first person we saw go through the gauntlet, she was pointing that out that, you know, he's really playing the social card. He's really kind of getting in ingratiating himself with people. So several people are noticing that Christian is playing that social card.
Okay. Is there a Survivor player we could compare Christian to? I was going to say, is he Ozzy? But he's not really that good in the challenges.
I'm trying to think of somebody who's basically... Who's a Survivor player that's constantly saying that they're going to, kick butt and take names and then just kind of fall short?
Is he the specialist?
Maybe the specialist.
But it's a good social game.
If we want to actually paint, is he a Malcolm?
Is he Malcolm?
He seems to be liked, but he keeps losing at challenges.
Yeah.
Thinking like for Malcolm 1.0, Matt singing.
Yeah. He looks a little bit like a skinnier Malcolm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's something just even like, but Malcolm at least throws, I think Malcolm throws off a more likable vibe than Christian does. That's the only, but the people there do seem to like it.
Okay.
So
we go to see the Fates. What was your take on the Fates? We didn't get to talk to you after the first episode. What was your reaction to the three Fates?
I was glad to see that affirmative action seems to be live and well in Everrealm.
Well, we're all represented with the Fates. That was good.
Yes, we are. And with the closed captioning, I did learn that one of the Fates' names is Talmuh. Talmuh.
Talmuh?
Yeah, I didn't get... So yeah, whenever they're speaking off screen and you're not actually seeing the Fate speak, it gives you the, or with closed caption, it gives you the name of the person or the character that is speaking. And one of the Fates, I think the African-American in the center, I believe her name is Talmuh, T-A-L-M-U-H. I didn't get the names of the other two, but maybe we'll get those in the upcoming weeks.
Talmuh!
The Fates have names.
Good. Well, that's important. Okay.
I like the reverb that they have through the speaker system. That's a nice little effect.
Well, I'm typically watching these on the East Coast feed, and it's sort of it's not great audio for me, so I'm not able to exactly pick it all up. Closed captioning is not an option for me.
Okay. You know what? I like the Fates, I guess. I'm curious if their role evolves in any way. I'd like to see them appearing in more surprising places, because, like, literally, if that's the quote-unquote tribal council set, then it seems to kind of imply that the entire story is going to take place in or around the castle and that area. They're not going to be going, like, you know, traveling a great distance to any battles or anything. But it would be kind of, like, interesting or fun to see, like, they have, like, they uncover a crypt, and the Fates meet them there, and they give them some sort of challenge. Because we don't really know how the challenges are necessarily going to play out from here on out. Like, so far they've been, like, a battle, training ground type challenges. And we have a small hint at next week at kind of what might be coming and how they might try to handle this. But it'll be interesting to see how the challenges evolve, and then if we also end up seeing the what happens with the Fates, does that evolve as well? I'm hoping it does a little bit.
Yeah, I'm really was not feeling this section tonight, this segment of blacksmith challenge. I don't even know what we're doing. We're taking horseshoes out of the fire and then put them in the water and then nail them onto a wheel. Like, nothing about this challenge was appealing to me.
Yeah, this is one of those like quests in World of Warcraft where you have to, you know, find and skin 30 ferrets and then you get to advance. You get some experience, and it was pretty run of the mill. I'm hoping again that those sorts of challenges evolve. Like, if the challenges during the main part of the show become integrated into the story, I hope this last part that also evolves to get integrated to the story. Because right now it's a lot of story. Because what I don't want to see happen is that we have like 45 minutes of story, integrated challenge, all kind of being cohesive, and then you get to kind of a grinding halt where they have to go to this place and nail horseshoes on something after what's kind of potentially been what looks like might be kind of a you know, more of a fast-paced story next week.
Like, at least in the training sequences, okay, we're getting you trained for battle. We need to see, you know, who is the best warrior. Like, next week it's the challenge, like, okay, you all have to clean the stable, and whoever cleans the stable the fastest will advance. And again, it's not even like whoever loses the blacksmith challenge goes home. Whoever wins the blacksmith challenge gets immunity from the vote that comes there. So it's not the ultimate deciding thing. It eats up a lot of time on the show, and it's just, I thought it was boring tonight. I actually, in fairness, I liked the bow and arrow challenge last week, because I felt like, oh, there's a little bit of intrigue here of whose dummy do you want to shoot at? And it was a little bit of, you know, exposing the politics of who were you going after. I like that one. This one I felt like was a dud of nailing horseshoes to a wheel.
But the horseshoes are different sizes, and you had to, it was like a puzzle.
Jim was a machine.
Yes. Yeah. I thought for sure that Christian was going to get penalized in some way by not putting on the apron and throwing the, they seem to make a bigger, I mean, they seem to be making a big deal about how Christian was all scattered and didn't do some of the things that he was told to do. And it ended up not looking like it was going to have an impact on anything. So I agree, it was strange. I was surprised that Ashley didn't do better with her affinity for horses, but I guess she said she's never shod a horse. I was pleased to see that she used the word shod correctly, but she had never shod a horse before. So,
yeah, is shod like, it's like shooed, but with a apostrophe? It's like S-H-O-E apostrophe E-D?
I think it's just S-H-O-D, but she, I guess it's just the correct term for the past tense of shooed, sure. Okay. He is shoeing the horse, but then the horse has been shot.
Did production throw her a bone by giving a shoe the horses challenge?
I don't think that there would be any reason for them to look to want to potentially save Ashley and give her an edge.
And then we have to decide, who are we going to stand behind? Kurt, would you be a stand behind Ashley or a stand behind Christian kind of guy?
You know what? It would all depend on, I guess, the relationship that I had with Christian. Like, watching the show, I think I would have stood behind Ashley, only because, as I think you pointed out last week with Jessica, is that Christian is kind of getting the villain edit, kind of a soft villain edit, but a villain edit. And so I was kind of hoping that Ashley would win, you know, largely impacted by the editing. So as a viewer, I would have stood behind Ashley, but, you know, in the middle of the game, you know, maybe Christian's like, great. He seems to have actually won, you know, several people over. I thought that one thing I thought was interesting about the discussion is, at least we as people were discussing their options, they're at least outwardly trying to seem to be pretty even-handed. They weren't necessarily playing favorites. We haven't seen a lot of cliques forming necessarily. We've seen some groups that seemed, I guess, be getting along, but there was nobody who seemed to be really like hardcore lobbying for anybody in particular. So there was actually more support for Ashley than I had thought that there was going to be.
Yeah.
And this is where Shondo said that, you know, with Ashley, she's good at what she says she's good at, whereas Christian tends to kind of overclaim things. What I thought was interesting when they actually got to the vote was, unlike last week where this seemed kind of like to be a mad rush towards, you know, Katie and Christian, who you're going to stand behind, this one they seemed to actually be told to go one at a time and slowly and deliberately, you stand behind somebody, okay, next up, you stand behind somebody, like they were, you know, grabbing their diplomas at commencement or for graduation. And it was interesting because it ended up getting down to, you know, four people behind Christian and four people behind Ashley, and then Andrew, the guy who made the m'lady mistake with the queen, you know, it all comes down to him and who he's going to stand behind, which I thought was interesting. And it's also, personally, I'm not a fan of the you get to potentially vote after other people have voted and you get to see what the current response is. I'm personally not a fan of that.
So you would prefer it be more of a survivor type blind vote?
Yeah, you know,
Big Brother,
you know,
as well.
Pull, and then it gets revealed, like you put your sword in the stone of the person that you want to vote for. I don't know. And so Andrew felt that he was the decision maker because there are already four votes for Christian and four votes for Ashley, and that his vote was going to be the tiebreaker. But technically, the vote was going to be 5-4, and any of the five people who voted for Christian were technically the swing vote.
Anybody. And how did they decide that order? Was that in the order of the challenge performance?
You know what? I don't think so, because Shondo wasn't the first person to go. He wasn't the last person to go. He was kind of squarely in the middle of the group. And Bonnie, who I think was like on the bubble, she would have been, if they had been four people competing in the Horseshoe Challenge, she would have been the fourth.
Yeah.
She was the kind of squarely in the middle as well. So I don't know how they picked the order. I think the fact that they had them kind of do this deliberate one at a time selection makes me think that production had, you know, talked to each one in a confessional type atmosphere, you know, prior to the vote. I think they don't want to go into the final vote being surprised themselves about what's going to happen. So they probably, when they saw it was going to be a 5-4 vote, they probably arranged the order in which the people ended up voting. I was most surprised though that Jasmine stood behind Christian, because she was, you know, when she and Letitia were talking to Jim and trying to build him up, and Christian came in and hopped on the bed and put his arms around them. She was, again, Jasmine said he's playing a social game. He's getting into every single group here. And so I thought for sure that she was going to, because of that observation, I thought she was going to support Ashley, and she ended up supporting Christian, which did surprise me.
Okay, I thought it was really good also when Shondo was, he takes it all really seriously. He, like, they were talking about, like, the deliberations, and he's like, we're talking about war here. Like, it's really, he, like, I don't think he knows it's fake.
Yeah, that's, and that's, And again, with something where it's as immersive as this, again, like it, like I, you know, compared it more to Murder in Small Town X earlier. I think it was, you know, Whodunit last summer was a little bit, I think, harder to be fully immersed in. But here you've got the storyline, you've got this huge castle. I'm glad to see that the players are just trying to at least play this role. I think that's fun to see and encouraging to see.
In Whodunit, they did everything, but with like a tongue, you know, firmly planted in the cheek. There is, you know, no tongue in cheek on the quest.
Correct.
Yes. Everything is like deadly serious and not ironic in any way.
Yeah. And that would be so like, if I was on this, it would be so hard not to be a smartass.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of the things where you would, I think like your vote, your Casey Kasem vote in Survivor, I feeling that there'd be lots of, me getting shut down by the queen or by production in terms of some of the things that I would just be tempted to say.
Yeah.
So it's very serious.
Do you feel like the show would be more fun and would it be better if it did not take itself so seriously the entire time? Or do you feel like for them to pull off what they're trying to do, they need to take everything very seriously?
That's, you know what? That's a really good question. Because you know, when I started watching this, I mean, this took me back to my full disclosure, back in my college days, I did play a little bit of Dungeons and Dragons. And this took me back to that a little bit in terms of lots of, and you play that, there would be lots of wisecracking around. There would be lots of like, you know, smart ass, comments about things that are going on in commentary. And it would be so hard to play this game and not have that. But I think for this to have more of that kind of Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings tone, they really want to keep everything even-handed and to take itself with the level of seriousness. And I think that's probably appropriate.
Okay. So we end up having Ashley end up being the one that goes home. Everybody seems like they're cool with Christian. We talk about how Christian has the highest skill set level of the people that are there. So Shondo tells us Christian's a cool guy. Look, if you die, you die honorably. And Christian says, nothing's going to stop me.
Yeah, it seems like he's got that. It almost seems like public knowledge that he, I think even Andrew was saying, or someone was saying that, he just used his get out of jail free card, that we're not going to, you know, he earned his way out of the first one. He socialized his way out of the second one. If he's there another time, then his number's up, it sounds like. So we'll see what happens there.
All right, so let's talk about the big dinner scene again. So I was surprised when we had this, you know, what do we call this? The epilogue of the episode where we go to dinner, and who's there first? Is it Creo? Or is it Sir Ansgar?
I thought that they all were there kind of at the same time, honestly. I didn't take note of that.
Okay.
I think they all were roughly there at the same time that... I mean, we talked about Ansgar kind of being good cop, bad cop in one person. But I think like if you kind of put him a little bit more firmly in bad cop, then, you know, Creo's kind of the good cop. It's kind of I think they're almost a team in terms of how they treat they handle the different, the players, the contestants.
Okay. So they're hanging out and they have their food and they're like, go ahead, eat. And Creo is going to tell a story. Almost.
Yeah, was it about Ansgar and a horse?
Yeah, and then who shuts him up? Vizier's like, we don't want to hear your story.
No, I think Ansgar was like, this is not the place for that story.
Okay, yeah.
I think Creo asked Ansgar, like, Ansgar's got a great story to tell you about something he did with a horse, and Ansgar is like, this is not the time or the place for that story.
All right, so now here comes the queen, and she's like, oh.
She wants to hear the story.
Paladin, sit. And she wants to hear the story, she wants to tell stories. And she tells us about the prince, her brother, who died in the Great Plague.
Okay, he didn't die in battle, he died in a plague?
The Great Plague.
I kind of like drifted off a little bit here in terms of like the, oh, this is like, it's like we're getting prologue in the epilogue, and my mind didn't know how to process it.
That's fine. Okay, so the queen is going to have some wine. Now, I feel like we need to go back and... Is this now? Is this officially the crime scene, or is this the last area that the queen was at?
I think this would be the crime scene slash place of death, and that her last known whereabouts would probably be her chambers or the throne room.
Okay, and so then next week, then they're going to split up and go explore each of these things.
Yes, they each get to pick one of those, or they get to inspect her body in the morgue.
Okay, so. Kurt, at what point in this whole sequence did you feel like you knew the queen was going to be poisoned?
The moment that there's a moment where a serving girl, like literally a serving girl came. I still remember the shot. We kind of were over the back left shoulder of the queen looking at the table, and a servant girl came up and poured wine in the glass of the queen. And that's when I was like, oh, she's going to get poisoned.
Yeah.
and again, it was for those who didn't like listen to the Whodunit podcast or watch Whodunit, they obviously, you know, the crime scene and all that stuff and visiting the queen in the morgue, probably not going to happen. But this, I couldn't help but think that, oh, she's going to die. And then when the viziers showed up shortly afterwards, well, it sounds like they I can't remember if like they, she started telling the stories before the wine or after the wine was poured. I have to go back and check on when the wine was poured, because it almost seems then that the wine was poured, but then there was a lot of storytelling and no drinking. So did the poisoning take place like a long time after that? But when the vizier showed up, I thought, okay, maybe she's not actually going to die. But then she was poisoned.
Yeah. Which whodunit death would you feel like this was the most similar to? Was this like Don saying that he needed to go heat up his steak?
Yep. That's exactly. I was thinking this is like Don. Getting killed. That was the closest to, I think, poisoning that we got. I'm trying to mentally go through all the deaths and whodunit quickly, but the first one that came to mind was Don at a meal. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're like, don't drink it, don't drink it. But she did. Okay, so the queen is in critical condition at this hour, at the very least. Okay.
Yes. They, you know, spoiler alert, it does look like she's basically at death's door next week, but she has not yet died.
Oh, if they don't kill the queen, I'm going to be very unhappy with this.
Why are you going to be unhappy with that?
Because then have some balls and kill the queen.
Well, they've already killed the prince. It doesn't seem like there's a king in the picture. It doesn't seem like there's any royal offspring. I mean, this isn't game. I mean, you know, kudos to me. I just finished season one of Game of Thrones today. But this isn't. But I don't think there's going to be like a death. I think Game of Thrones has you spoiled in terms of fantasy death count.
Yeah. Well, it's Kurt. Again, I don't want to say anything that you can't unhear about this. But it feels a little like Game of Thrones. Feels a little bit like Game of Thrones. Got to kill somebody. Okay. So
you were dancing around the spoiler button. There,
dancing around things. Okay, let's take some questions here from the listeners of RHAP talking about the quest. Rick W. James wants to know, how do I take this show seriously?
I think you have to suspend as much disbelief as the players are. I mean, it's definitely a little bit more experimental, but I say give it at least a couple more weeks. I think this from the previews for next week, I think it's going to step up.
Okay. Holly Neathammer says, what is the purpose of the huddle before they stand behind the one voted in or out? There doesn't seem to be any consistency in what they say or with how they vote. This is a fair point.
Yeah. Maybe it's just to fill up time. And it's such kind of a round table discussion that you don't necessarily come out of that with a, like, unlike going into Survivor or Tribal Council, you often have a clear idea of who people are going to vote for, or at least who all but maybe a couple people are going to vote for. Here, it's just kind of a discussion, but like I said, it seems to be so even-handed and people are providing reasons for both sets of people that... You know, it, for me, it wasn't so much that, person A was defending, you know, Christian the entire time and then voted for Ashley. Like the only person that did that was Jasmine. But for me, it just seemed like there was like discussion. arguments were presented for both sides by everybody, and then voting took place. It was just, it does seem strange.
I thought Shando was making a point, or Shando was making a point in saying about how, well, you know, Christian, he said he's good at something, but he's not good at what he said he was.
That's true. That, you know, I will give you that.
Yeah. Okay. How about Albert Vargas, who wants to know, does the winner of this show automatically get a job at Medieval Times?
There hasn't been really any talk of prize money or anything like that, has there?
No.
Like, some sort of prize? But you get like a fake knighthood?
One true hero.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Okay. Rick James wants to also say, these paladins also know that they're competing against each other, right? Keeping the contestant with the best skill set is not a good thing.
I would have to disagree there, because we saw in the first episode that you do get paired with other people, and even some of the arguments that people were making there about who to keep around is that, you know, if you're potentially working with somebody on a team, you want to bring with you the people who are going to most likely help you potentially get to the end. So it's kind of a mixed bag. So, for instance, let's say Shando is the best challenge competitor, bar none, regardless of challenge type. You want to keep him around for a bit in the instance that you're going to end up being on a team with him in some sort of challenge. But I agreed, if he's against you, then you're potentially, you know, you're potentially screwed. So it's, you do have to have that sort of balance. It's not about getting out just the strongest person, I don't think. Not necessarily.
Okay. Katie Donegan wants to know, I'm watching episode 2 tonight after listening to the podcast for episode 1. I'm wondering if they had some sort of a pre-game boot camp. I ride horses, and these people all seem like they have some sort of vague clue about riding, more than your average person with no experience anyway. Or do they all have to come in with a predetermined skill set?
I was wondering the exact same thing, especially not just it wasn't so much about the horseback riding, but it was more about the when Jasmine got up there and just, you know, nailed it with the archery. She said it was her imagination that did it, but I was like, imagination and any sort of, you know, pre-game training of some sort. And even last week in the Fates Challenge, where they were firing those arrows at the targets on the rotating disc, I was like, they're seem to be hitting an awful lot of the targets for people who, you know, wouldn't think necessarily right. Would come across a bow and arrow.
I thought the same thing.
So my guess is there was one. Maybe if we can get some... If we end up being able to talk to any of the players of, you know, post show or post episode, something we can potentially find out.
Alex Wilpon wants to know, how has Christian convinced the rest of the paladins that he has an expansive skill set? He has blown basically every challenge.
Well, I think it's like lie big at the beginning and just whittle down what you're actually good at. So I guess like the more he convinces them that he's actually not good at things A and B, the more likely it is he's good at things C and D. I don't know. I don't know if it's been convincing as much as just declaring.
Antonio Mazzaro wants to know, why the F are there fates if the paladins decide who stays or goes?
Great question. I don't think it's up to the fates to choose anything. The fates just make sure that destiny plays out, and they facilitate a fair arena in which the paladins can choose their own fates. They are the master of their own fates, and they just make sure they're able to actually select fairly.
Okay.
So we'll go with that one.
They're the Arthur of their own fate?
They are the Arthur of their own fates.
Is it possible that fate is just a shorter way of saying facilitate?
Sure, we'll go with that.
Okay. Antonio also says, a side note, the working theory is that a trained monkey had poison. What do you think? He says, prove me wrong.
I you know what? Maybe the trained monkey came across on the raft with them. Was that Ronnie who was the main proponent of the trained monkey from Whodunit?
I think so.
Yeah. Did not think about a trained monkey. You know, the trained monkey may have killed Gino last summer, and then just or was the bobcat? We forgot the fact that it could have been potentially the deadly bobcat as well.
Yes, any number of things.
Yes.
Katie Donegan also is proposing that it looks like that the paladins may run into Miracle Max next week, so he could be the person that saves the queen.
That's a great call. From what I saw, I completely agree.
Okay.
Have fun curing the queen.
All right. So let's recap night two of the quest. Overall, the good and the bad. Let's talk about what's working and what's not working. Let's start with the bad and close with the good. All right, Kurt, the bad in night two.
Horseshoes,
bad. Yes. I also felt like the competition went on a bit too long. I feel like 11 people doing the individual competition, it takes a couple minutes for each person to do it. I don't think you can have a TV show where 11 people go one at a time with an individual challenge.
Right. And I was having a hard time keeping track of like who did what and was going when and doing well. But I do think it would not be right in the tone of the show to have like a scoreboard. So they pop up on the screen off to the side that kind of shows, you know, Bonnie's name getting bumped up because, you know, Christian did worse than her. And it seemed like there was a lot going on and just not an easy way to summarize and capture what was going on.
Yeah. So I felt like the whole middle part, I just felt like was too long. I thought that the challenge last week, I thought was probably both of the challenges in the first episode I thought were better.
Right.
Okay. And then the good, obviously, is killing the queen.
Killing the queen. I'm liking I thought the good things in episode two were actually the story elements. So the meeting the queen in the very cramped throne room, the dinner at the end where she ends up getting poisoned. I think we could have, you know, shaved off a bit of the challenge. And like the little parts of the challenge where the vizier and the queen were, you know, talking about Christian, or where we saw Andrew mess up in his interaction with the queen. I'd like to see more interaction between the contestants and this realm, potentially outside of the challenge area arena.
I agree. I'm less interested in the individual contestants, of course, outside of Shondo, than I am in what's going on in the world.
Yes. I did think that, though, I do feel that I know that some of, whereas like last week I finished the show maybe saying I have a 20% familiarity with the contestants as a whole. I'd say that I'm probably up to probably like maybe even like, you know, 50-55% now in terms of being able to tell them apart a little bit more. Ashley and Lena were getting a little confused for me, so Ashley's gone. I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
But I think they're fleshing the contestants out a little bit more. One of the things that it would be nice to see, again, not to keep going back to Murder in Small Town X, but they got into groups and they explored different areas. Like one group would have to investigate this crime scene, another group would have to go investigate this, you know, interview these people. It would be nice if it was a little bit more, sandboxy, where they can actually go out and explore particular areas that interest them versus being kind of railroaded down a particular single storyline. It does seem a little bit one track versus potentially, you guys can go do this and you guys can go do this.
All right, well, next Thursday, I am going to be off to the Pod Move conference for podcasting in Dallas. So I will not be on our quest recap for next week, but Jessica Leese, the great Jessica Leese, will be joining Kurt to recap all of the fallout from the death of Queen Rally.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
The assassination attempt of the Queen.
Yes. Yes, this I just realized when we were talking about this that I don't believe that Jessica and I have actually podcasted together before. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, and Kurt, I know that you are podcasting all summer long about the international doings in the Big Brother houses around the world.
Yeah, we're still in the UK. Mallory Beasley and I have been podcasting about that all summer, and thank
you
to all
those. What a season of Big Brother UK!
Oh boy, yeah. It's they keep throwing in more and more twists. They're down to the final eight. Rumor has it that the finale is Monday, the 18th of August. So we'll see. I know there's four people up for eviction as of now, and two of them, it's a double eviction, just like in the U.S. Two people will be going home on Friday, and you know they told the house guests that this was their last week to nominate. We think that their friends and family may be nominating on their behalf next week. We'll see what plays out, but it's been a fun summer.
Fun summer, okay. And if you want to hear more about the BB UK happenings, and then Kurt's going to go right into Celebrity Big Brother UK, you can hear all that on our reality TV wrap-ups feed. That's all on robhasawebsite.com, but you can get that in iTunes at robhasawebsite.com/wrap-ups, RHAPUPS. Okay, we've got a lot to do. I finished Big Brother just before we recorded this podcast. The recap of the double eviction is up on robhasawebsite.com. I'm also going to be talking with Mike Bloom sometime tomorrow about the next to last episode of Last Comic Standing. So a lot to do in the next couple days here on Rob as a Podcast.
Sounds great.
All right, Kurt, be careful. Make sure you have the wine taster taste anything else that you have to drink.
Yeah, does alcohol kill poison? I just throw some vodka in the wine and I'll be good?
I don't know.
I'll try that.
All right. Have a great one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.